At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
The state of West Virginia was like, listen, man, we got a lot going on, but Giants ain't one of them. Sorry.
They want you to stick with the Mothman in West Virginia.
Hell yeah.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
more like Ancient Aliens.
This is More Like Ancient Aliens, a podcast about a show that might be suffering from a form of Stockholm Syndrome, Ancient Aliens. I'm Toby Ball, an investigative mythologist or something.
Somebody had to claim investigative mythologist. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds, a unique genetic specimen, neither too tall nor too short.
Just right. And today, we are very excited to have author, researcher, and trustee at Expanding Frontiers. And I will continue and say, if you like Strange Arrivals and want to listen or read somebody who's actually doing the real like UFO research, check out Jack's stuff. He's got a couple of podcasts, a couple of books, articles and stuff. Just Google him and check out what he's done, because I think you'll really like his stuff. Anyway, without further ado, Jack Brewer, welcome.
Thank you. I really appreciate being here. Thank you, Toby and Brandon.
It should be fun. Let's see. Today we're looking at season 11, episode 10, The Prototypes. This originally aired on July 22nd, 2016. Also on this date, somehow, between India and China, at least 168 people died in lightning storms, which seems crazy to me. Also, the Battle of Fallujah is happening, and John Lewis led a sit-in after the Senate failed to pass 4 gun control bills.
Any of that could be aliens. Any of, especially the lightning.
The lightning, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Go inside, folks, or in a car.
This has been our public service announcement.
That's exactly right.
Thank you, Toby.
We try to improve people's lives whenever possible. Why are we covering this episode? So this episode is actually pretty focused on the main Ancient Aliens theory, which is that ETs intervened in human evolution and affairs. And the thesis, this actually has a more straight ahead thesis than most of them, but it's that ETs may be using DNA manipulation to create a new race of humans.
They're always hinting at the possibility that aliens are in there monkeying around under the hood of us.
So we start sort of fortuitously for us, because Jack Brewer happens to be one of the world's experts on this, which is David Jacobs, of all people. So I'll get Jack to explain who David Jacobs is, but he is, to say controversial is kind of an understatement. Jack, can you kind of give us a little rundown on him?
Sure. David Jacobs is a self-described researcher about UFO alien abduction. He was a historian at Temple University, and he ostensibly put forth the idea that he was just interested in alien abduction, yet the evidence led him towards coming to the conclusion that there was some type of alien hybrid breeding program going on. And to put it mildly, his research is riddled with holes and ethical problems and circular logic. It really just depends on how far do you want to go with it, that he is an unreliable narrator, to put it.
We seem to have lost Jack, and I think that that's not a coincidence. Somebody shut him down.
David Jacobs, or perhaps it's the hybrids.
Well, that's an ominous start.
Jack, you got shut down by forces beyond your control, possibly extraterrestrial ones.
It would seem so.
Yeah, those hybrids.
David Jacobs is a very dubious UFO researcher who got embroiled in ethical controversy with a research subject named Emma Woods. His work is just riddled with ethical problems and inconsistencies, and he is an unreliable narrator, to put it very politely.
Part of what was going on with Emma Woods, in addition to this sort of salacious stuff that he was doing over the phone from Philadelphia to Emma, who was in New Zealand, is that he kind of had created this weird little drama that was going on that involved another one of his, you know, quote unquote patients, who supposedly like hybrids would show up and take over a computer and start texting. And at one point he decides he needs to go on the run because he's endangered by these hybrids. And the place where he decides that he needs to hide out in is actually his summer vacation home in Cape Cod or Nantucket. I can't remember which one. So it's all just pretty bizarre. And I wanted to interview him for Strange Arrivals. And not surprisingly, he didn't get back to me, but he had a website which sort of had his sort of rebuttals to Emma Woods' claims. It was all written as if all this stuff about the hybrids was true. And he was sort of justifying it. He was like, well, you know, these hybrids were after me. And, you know, what was I supposed to do?
Go to Cape Cod.
It's just bizarre. It's just super, super bizarre. Anyway, I don't know how much vetting Ancient Aliens does on these guys, but the fact that they got him for what doesn't seem like a very important part of this episode, it's a little disturbing, quite honestly, and not in the normal way of Ancient Aliens, which is usually just sort of funny and disturbing.
This seems like the episode that is the most haunted by actual science. Like, it seems like they have the hardest time breaking away from the actual science of human evolution. They can't help but say the Denisovans were in Siberia, that the Neanderthals were in Western Europe. They can't help but talk about how we spread across the planet. But you need to set your thesis from the jump. And if the thesis is aliens created humans and have been experimenting here and there, doing sort of a sampler platter of different kinds of humans over the millennia, then you have to have somebody at the outset say, well, it's a hybrid program. So I guess they were like, this is our guy. We're going to have him come in and say the hybrid thing. And then we'll use that as a jumping off point to move on to bigger and better things. That's sort of, it seemed like, why he was there.
Yeah.
Hypnosis be damned.
Hypnosis be damned. So let's go back to a time when many hominids walked the earth. We go to South Africa, a place called Rising Star Cave. These always have some reference to the stars or whatever, for whatever reason. So some amateur spelunkers find remains of a previously undiscovered hominid species, Homo naledi. And we get William Leonard, who's the anthropology chair at Northwestern. And it does seem like kind of a classic case of a guy getting interviewed by something and giving fairly like reasonable answers, perhaps not knowing that they're about to be thrown into some absolutely batshit theory about stuff. So he says that Homo naledi has a mix of primitive and advanced characteristics, which I guess that's probably right. And we get Peter Ward, who's an astrobiologist at the University of Washington. I've never heard of what astrobiology. Do you know what this is, Brandon?
Yeah, it's people who study the possibility of life outside of the Earth. An astrobiologist can be somebody who's like looking at bacteria on Mars or the possibility of bacteria on Mars. So it's not always super intelligent life. It could just be, can this mix of molecules exist outside of the atmosphere of the Earth on other planets? Pretty interesting.
It seems like a weird kind of grab bag of things that sounds perfect for Ancient Aliens, to be quite honest.
The narrator and some of the UFO authors and researchers seem to like to hang a lot on new research happened or new discoveries. And it's my understanding that ongoing research and subsequent new discoveries is not entirely unheard of. I mean, archaeologists are doing digs all the time. Anthropologists are continuing to study things. They're going to learn new things once in a while. And I actually laughed out loud when one of the show personalities said, "So we must ask."
We have to ask.
"Is this extraterrestrial related?" No, we mustn't ask, but okay.
Well, if there's a drinking game with that phrase, you get pretty drunk every episode.
Then there's the other version, which is even more depersonalized and universal. The really passive, "It must be asked," or "It has to be asked." So it's not even "I'm asking." They don't even take credit for it. They're like, "This question is just ambient. It's just in the air, you know, like we're just plucking it out of the sky. Everyone's thinking it."
We've actually talked to three of the, you know, academics who they have on the show, and they've talked about being on it and that they basically show up and are asked a whole bunch of questions in their field of expertise, but without any context. So they're answering questions accurately, but have no idea how it's going to be used in the future in the show. I mean, I'm sure they don't realize exactly how their sound bites are going to be deployed in the larger narrative.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
So now we get our first good graphic, which is the hominid family tree. And all the skulls are basically off-white. They're sort of skull-colored, except for some reason the Denisovan, which is gray. They don't make any comment about it or whatever. It just happens to be that way. And then we move on to your boy, David Childress. Brandon describes it as being like the Lord of the Rings.
That was the quote that encouraged us to do this episode, Toby, if you recall. I was like, we're going to do a Lord of the Rings episode if that's what they're promising here. We want to see all the stuff. We want to see the one extraterrestrial to unite all the others.
It's nothing like Lord of the Rings. In the Lord of the Rings, all these weird little people were around each other. And in this, like, they pretty specifically say that these different groups of hominids, you know, developed in isolation. And that was part of the way it worked, which is why you get people with sort of extraordinarily tall or extraordinarily small or with these different adaptations. It's because they're isolated. So they're adapting evolutionarily, if that is a word, to these specific conditions in which they are at.
Yeah, that's the problem with their argument is, how did this group of people turn out so differently than that one? Well, evolutionary adaptation is how that happened. And Nick Redfern early on says, you know, we think of evolution as this very slow process. It's very gradual. So how are you going to have these rapid changes? Which is old school Darwin. And yes, but subsequently, they have come to realize that there are these what's called epigenetic causes, which is, you know, all of these genes we have that can be turned on in the lifetime of a single organism, and that will modify behaviors, modify characteristics. And so evolution can kind of happen slow as a broad thing, but then certain things can happen to change the life of an individual, which may or may not make them more fit for survival and reproduction. So that's why you see some of these specializations come out, right? Like, we can talk about this more when we get into the Denisovans, but they have a gene that processes low oxygen environments more efficiently than some of the others, right? Which is why you see that with Tibetans, right, who live at high altitude. They have this particular gene that they can trace back to the Denisovans. And because of that gene, they're able to process low oxygen conditions better. There's another one that allows them to digest oils and fats, which you see in like the Inuits who live on these sort of high fat diets. Like you see all these things and you're like, well, it evolved for this particular group. And then those people spread across the planet and they shared those qualities with each other as they interbred. And then, you know, now we have this evidence that this stuff is still showing up in a gene pool and conferring selective advantages to this day. But the idea that they didn't meet each other, they didn't hang out, they didn't get together for cocktails is, which is what the show kind of suggests. It's like, how did they get where they were going? Well, everybody fucking walked and it just took a while. And then eventually they met up somewhere along the way. And that's how we got where we are today. Not spaceships. Jack, I'm sorry, it's not spaceships taking them around, much as you might hope it is.
One of the things I think that this show, like this episode does, and I think it happens all the time when we're talking about like sort of prehistory, is that the time frame of these things kind of passes by without much reference to our own experience. So you'll talk about things that happened 40,000 years ago or 80,000 years ago. And it's like, that is a long time. That is like 40 times as long as it's been since, you know, the year zero, right? So when they talk about these things, about things happening suddenly, it's not like it happened 40 years ago or whatever. It's thousands and thousands of years. But in evolutionary time, it feels sudden because it's not what you normally associate with it.
Yeah. And also there's not a lot of evidence. They're like, well, how come the Denisovans seem to show up all of a sudden? And that's like what Jack was saying. It's like, well, some of that is just we discovered new stuff that we didn't know 50 or 100 years ago. So we have to revise our models. But this idea that like somehow because it conflicts with a previous model that it's wrong is insane. And two, you have to go with what evidence has been provided or what evidence we discover along the way. And sometimes that it means a recreational spelunker will wander into a cave and change the course of the science of human evolution. But, you know, somebody's got to do that first. And really, a recreational spelunker sounds like somebody who fell into a cave. You know, it's like, oh, I was just walking along. Boom, fall into a cave.
That is the last thing that I'll ever do. I sometimes watch on YouTube just to creep myself out, these guys like squeezing through these cave.
Oh, yeah.
That's like my nightmare. Just real quickly from this section, the only two things that deserve some notice is Giorgio Tsoukalos suggests essentially intelligent design theory, but instead of God, that it's ETs that are directing it.
One has to wonder, could this be an experiment by extraterrestrials where in the end, only Homo sapiens survived?
And then Linda Moulton Howe shows up, which is always a treat. And as if ETs created many human prototypes. Jackie, I'm sure you've run into Linda Moulton Howe.
I have. I've also dealt quite a bit with this whole thesis of, you know, genetic engineering. And as the two of you guys are aware, if a person wants to understand that better, there are sources and people that'll talk to you about it that you can ask, and you're apt to get significantly different answers than you'll hear on Ancient Aliens. For instance, for some of my research, I consulted with a microbiologist and an engineer, and both of them explained in various ways how if you wanted to introduce DNA into a culture, this is not how you would do it. It just doesn't add up mathematically. Like if a certain nationality came to New York in 1930, well, you wouldn't end up with a pervasive culture by the year 2000 of that nationality in New York. It would blend into the culture and it would keep getting watered down. It wouldn't grow more. And the microbiologists explained that, where the engineer did just the math with the saucers and the sightings. And he's like, just the population alone, you're just not going to get to enough people to make a difference, you know, with one woman a night out of her home in, you know, Brooklyn or whatever the purported case may be.
And also the theory that, as we know, the UFOs in the stories, they scoop people up, they get put on a table, sperm or egg are taken away, right? And then the person's returned. And often the story involves this other little chapter, which is that the extraterrestrials will escort the people after they've been probed and extracted from, escort them into a room where they've got all these, you know, hybrid babies growing in vats, right? And they show it to them. They're like, here you go. This is what we're working on. Just thought you might be curious. And then they send them home, which I think is, it's a little bit like in a restaurant, you know, like they've got the open plan kitchens now where you can like see what they're doing back in the back. You want to see how your meatloaf is being baked or whatever. It's a little bit like that. But it's like, why do the aliens care if the humans are seeing what they're doing? Like, what do you care? You're just extracting anyway. Why do you got to be like, see, in case you're curious why we stole you, this is what we're working on. You know, if you have any notes, please take it up with our server before we return you. And, you know, here's a comment card or something. Why do they do that?
Yeah, that's a reasonable question.
Thank you, Jack. Toby never thinks I ask reasonable questions, so I'm glad you do.
One of the things I've observed along those lines, technology outgrew the narrative over that time. And people can be tested. Women can be tested. There are non-invasive tests about past pregnancies. There are a number of things that could resolve some of these answers and the self-described UFO, investigators, just avoid them. In fact, one of the most glaring things about David Jacobs, I had the opportunity to interview him once, and he claimed that one of the subjects of his, one of the women that were being assaulted regularly by human hybrids, I asked, why is it the police being notified? Why aren't forensic investigators notified? And he made a remark about she keeps the curtains of her windows closed, as if he wouldn't be able to see in while it's happening. So as if that would be the only way to gain evidence from it. And it's really dark. It's disturbing. It's really bizarre that you end up with a demographic of people walking around that, if they follow the narrative through all these twists and turns, it seems like it makes complete rational sense to be being assaulted regularly and not calling law enforcement.
But in answer to Brandon's question about why you get shown the babies, it depends on who you ask, but Bud Hopkins would say that the Greys can't really nurture babies. Like they don't have that nurturing quality. So sometimes they bring human women in just to cuddle with babies, to give them the nurturing they need to grow up to be well-adapted hybrids.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, so Flores Island. They find a skull of a full-grown, 3-foot-tall hominid that they, for some ungodly reason, nickname a hobbit, which probably made sense at the time, but it's just, in hindsight, seems like bad marketing. Anyway, they have tiny bodies, they have small brains, but they do have tools, and they are a distinct species. Giorgio Tsoukalos says, how did they get to the island?
So there are two options how this could have happened. One is that these hobbit people arrived there on boats, or they were planted there by extraterrestrials in the remote past.
Well, I'm going with option A on that one, but you know, I guess I have a 50-50 chance. And he does, then he says,
some people even have suggested that this island served as some type of a petri dish because of its isolation.
Sure. And this is sort of the beginning of the whole, well, they like to isolate like these different like hominid groups, kind of see what happens. So they're either on mountaintops or they're on distant islands or whatever. And that's part of the ET thing. And I just want people to know that we're going to get to the Denisovans, but first we're going to get to know our guest, Jack Brewer, a little better. Brandon, take it away.
Jack, one of the problems with this kind of pseudoscience and this sort of quasi-religious cultural product, let's say, is there's sort of an early level where, you know, you can, for example, watch Ancient Aliens and you can buy it on its face, or you can read Communion or any of that stuff and have just sort of a wash of like, ah, I think aliens have been here and interact with the human race, or I don't, I think it's all bullshit. But all of which is to say, like, really piecing together what's actually going on and like setting aside all of the silly nonsense is very time consuming. And that's what you have spent a lot of your time being consumed by, is like having to go into that very granular detail of this, you know, again, this sort of semi-religious world of UFO cults and stuff. So talk about that. How did you get into it?
That's an excellent description, Brandon. I was interested in it for the same reasons you're describing, and that I think a lot of people are. And I think that is the danger of shows like Ancient Alien, that if we see the nonsensical, the irrational, the logical fallacy material in a highly disproportionate degree to going to qualified experts and getting sober, more grounding input, it starts to seem rational. It really just depends on what we subject ourselves to, and it can seem to make sense. Now, that's not to say that there just absolutely is nothing new under the sun, or that there might not be yet to be better understood phenomena. I mean, of course, there's going to be more discoveries, more fascinating things to learn about our universe. But the logical fallacies are just killing us as a culture, in my opinion. And it creates a way of thinking, a brain rot, if you will, that allows opinion, gut punch, feeling, you know, a gut call to have as much sway in decision-making, voting, things like that, as systematic research. And so, yeah, I got interested in it. And because I was sincerely interested in it, I became disillusioned with the endless parade of paperbacks that present questions to get you to buy them and then don't resolve those questions. And the further I got into it, Brandon, the more when I talked to the actual witnesses of people that men like Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs were writing their books about, the more I was getting directly told, well, they kind of took some creative license with that part of the story, or outright telling me that's just not even what happened. That's not what I told them. That's not what happened. And as Toby's well aware, by the time I got in touch with Emma Woods, the wheels fell off of, wow, this isn't just misrepresenting reality. This is outright abusive behavior taking place in this genre to some extent, and a lot of enabling by the high-profile researchers that want it all to be a partisan effort. And, well, if David Jacobs sells, you know, symposium tickets, let's just move that story aside. And a lot of problems with exploitation and misinformation in the genre. And you're right that is not readily apparent to someone that just catches the occasional show on television or the occasional magazine article that might portray Skinwalker Ranch in a positive light or something like that.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
So, talk about the kind of history of your research. How did you get into looking into the UFO thing in the first place? Did you come in as someone who believed that UFOs were a thing, that we were really being visited, or were you coming in as a skeptic? And how did that proceed? How did you end up where you are now?
It seemed completely reasonable to me to think that if all these people are seeing quote-unquote flying saucers, alien vessels, saying they're meeting the occupants, well, then it seems completely reasonable that a bunch of stuffed shirts with degrees are trying to put the quietus on the story. And again, I'd like to emphasize, because I cared, I was sincerely interested in it, I began to study the work of people like Julia Shaw and Elizabeth Loftus and learned some things about how memory works. I learned about how if an investigator doesn't know what they're doing or if they're intentionally leading a witness, how that can sway a narrative. I learned things like, because somebody says the flying saucer was hovering right over my house, doesn't mean that the mental image that we all three get with that statement is all the same thing. Like, I might picture an incredible looking craft about 80 feet in the air, and they may be describing that when they stood in their front yard and looked at the house, they saw a dot on the horizon about 18 miles away, you know. So there's Nori in this episode says they can't all be wrong. Yeah, they can all be wrong. And there is no substitute for conclusive evidence available for public review. There are millions by now of reports. There are almost as many different explanations for all of those. There's not any one, two, three, all-encompassing answers. And that's one of the complexities and one of the nuances that make it a difficult subject to tackle, is there's a lot of things that are correct about it, a lot of skeptical points of view that are correct. And at the same time, there may be a few reports mixed in there among the million that are sincerely unknown phenomena. That doesn't mean it's alien. It doesn't mean it's intelligent non-human. But, you know, we'll know when we know. But that doesn't change the fact that actually, Mr. Nori, yes, everybody can be wrong. And whether they're all wrong or not, the fact of the matter is that probably 90% or better of all of these reports do have explanations, even if there's tens, hundreds, thousands of different categories of specific explanation.
So you worked on a number of different things over the years. You had a blog, the UFO Trail, worked on the UFO Trail. You work with, well, our previous guest, Erica Lukes, matter of fact, on expanding frontiers research, which is a 501c3. Very nice work if you can get it. And then you wrote a book, which you sort of touched on. The Grays Have Been Framed, Exploitation in the UFO Community. Wrote that in 2015. And that's an interesting take I want you to talk about a little bit. There's a default setting that we have when talking about ancient aliens and the affiliated people, you know, where it's like, yeah, in a lot of ways, it's harmless. Maybe it started as harmless. It was a way for some people to make a few bucks. But then certainly for a couple of reasons, one, the shifting political winds in the United States meant that this sort of belief in pseudoscience, the belief in conspiracy theories, a lot of this stuff took on a more sinister edge. But then you drill down into that a little bit more directly by saying some of these people really are exploiting people to whom bad things really happened, or they're dealing with some other kind of trauma or whatever, and these people are jumping on that and really exploiting that for personal gain or whatever and actually making things a lot worse. So talk about that a little bit, about how you decided to focus on that and what kinds of things you found.
I decided to focus on that because I felt like I had learned some things that needed to be said, that I could contribute some things to the genre for people that were ready for it, for people that were willing to sincerely look at it, for people like me who had honestly wanted to know more about the subject. And yeah, I discovered that regardless of if any non-human intelligence or unknown phenomena may be afoot, the fact remains the topic is being exploited by a lot of different demographics. That ranges from charlatans and hoaxers to people wanting to exploit it for financial gain to maybe more nefarious reasons. The intelligence community has had a hand and stirring the pot and obfuscating information. And it benefits all of those demographics to some extent for people to think that it's about aliens. And the name of the book, The Grays Have Been Framed, was an inside joke between me and some fellow researchers once upon a time. It's really not that complicated that, you know, it's exotic classified aircraft, so we're going to blame aliens. Really, it fundamentally isn't that complicated, but it can be complicated to try to explain to someone who is coming from like a Linda Moulton Howe mindset that's really solidified in that, but you know, they'll ask things like, well, how could they be faking it when they saw grays in the bedroom? And then you're like, well, you don't really know they saw grays in the bedroom. You know, somebody said they saw grays in the bedroom. And so we came up with just this catchphrase for the, we just joke and say the grays have been framed. They didn't do it, you know? Okay, maybe they're real, but they didn't do it. And so that's kind of where the title came from. And yeah, with Expanding Frontiers Research, there I volunteer in a number of capacities. One is I conduct records requests and Freedom of Information Act requests. And I help people that are interested in learning more about it conduct their own requests too. And then other things we do there involve archiving and YouTube production under Erica Lukes's direction, as you mentioned. And we really appreciate that you've had us on your show here, and Toby's been over talking with us at Expanding Frontiers. And yeah, thank you.
Well, we are glad to have you on the show. And yeah, you co-founded Expanding Frontiers Research with Erica Lukes, who was a past and hopefully future guest. So that's just very exciting work, I think, that, you know, you're putting the rubber to the road, as it were, and really kind of getting in there. When you start talking about FOIA requests, when you start talking about doing these interviews, talking to microbiologists, like figuring out where the trail leads you, you know, that kind of investigative work is really hard. But for you and Erica both, like going through and kind of systematically dismantling this myth, really the kind of perhaps most prevalent modern myth of the 20th and maybe 21st century coming out of the United States. Now we have congressional hearings about it. Like, it's gaining an influence culturally. You see things on TikTok and Instagram and everywhere. Obviously, there's a lot of people who stand to benefit from it. So yeah, what's it like to be a killjoy to a major postmodern religion?
Well, we like to think that we provide the public reliable information through proven research methods. And so we're just trying to tell people to not put the cart before the horse. Like, you really have to go back to learning how to learn. Like, in this episode, we're discussing, they're trying to move the debate to whether ET manipulated human evolution when we haven't established ET yet. If you're already a fan of ancient aliens, if you're already familiar with David Jacobs' work and things like that, you're already preconditioned for the sensational explanation. In the case of alleged alien abduction, I similarly think that the vast majority of reports are not hoaxes. I think that the emotions are real. I think the fear is often real. I think very traumatic things did happen to people. I think that they get confused about the source of that trauma. And I am certain that they are encouraged to be confused about the source of that trauma by people like David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins and a UFO community that sees them as another potential story to put on a stage at a UFO symposium. I obviously think it's of interest just to even FOIA the records and see how much the FBI, for instance, has been involved in the narrative over the decade. But it's really a buyer beware environment. And we just have to each take personal responsibility for knowing when we're jumping to premature conclusions, especially when that can be harmful to other people.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For a limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Yeah, it's funny. While you were talking, I was thinking, I was at a library in a town nearby us. I gave a presentation about Betty and Barney Hill, and everybody there was like deeply into UFOs. So I was like the only skeptic in the entire room. So the questions were just flying fast and furious. And the librarian was like wide-eyed in the back, like, oh my God, what's happening? Somehow Bud Hopkins and the whole abduction thing came up. And I said, well, you know, I think there's real questions about the quality of the science behind what they're doing. And are they using the scientific method, blah, blah, blah. And one woman in the audience said, she said, I think Dr. John Mack, the chair of the psych department at Harvard, would know a thing or two about scientific method. And I said, you know, he 100% did. The thing is that he talks quite openly about thinking it wasn't adequate to researching alien abductions. He said, we got to move past this Western scientific mindset. So I said, you know, John Mack knew what the what he was supposed to do. He just chose not to do it. That didn't go over well to the crowd. I'll put it that way. To the point where they're like right here afterwards, like, let me take you out for a beer. I was like, all right, I'll take you up on that.
And that's really what we're going for here is we want all of our stories to end with, that didn't go over very well with the crowd. God knows Toby's had a few of those in his life.
So we go to Siberia. And finally, the Denisovans show up. Nick Redfern, have you run into Nick, Jack?
I am aware of Nick. I actually like some of the directions of his research. I was paying close attention to how he was weighing his statements and occasionally would try to throw in the possibly or the perhaps.
He's a fairly common contributor here. He brings up the question, how did these distinct groups get to these different locations? That doesn't seem to me to be terribly surprising. I mean, it feels like all kinds of animals end up in different locations, and that's just kind of the product of migration.
One of the sort of fallacies that they're building this episode off of is like, how did these people get around? And like we were talking about earlier, it happened over a long period of time, but they sort of leave out this time frame, right? They're like, well, I don't know, modern humans evolved in Africa, so how'd these other guys evolve over here? Well, the answer is like humans started in Africa 600,000 years ago, and then they began to spread out, right? Started in Africa, early humans, and then they moved on. The ones that stayed in Africa, because they were there the longest and they had access to resources and they had the most stable communities, they ended up turning into modern humans. And yeah, the others, like the Denisovans who wandered far and wide, they ended up in Siberia and Tibet, and scientists think they're really fascinating because they were apparently so adaptable and could survive in all these different environments. So early humans left Africa 600,000 years ago. The Denisovans 200,000 years ago were roaming around Eurasia. And then about 40,000 years ago, modern humans emerged as we know them. And by that point, there was a lot of interbreeding between Denisovans and humans, between humans and Neanderthals, and, you know, eventually for a variety of reasons, all the others died out or got absorbed by us. To Jack's earlier point, like, you know, they sort of just got diluted down. They didn't really go away in that sense. They just sort of got absorbed by us and our design was the best. But that's, you know, pretty reasonable. If you just set the time scale of it, you understand like, yeah, people just wandered around and mixed and matched. And then this is what we ended up with, rather than this idea of like, collapsing the time scale to be like, I don't know how the Denisovans ended up way over here when the hobbits were way down here, you know, acting as though like this all happened in the course of a couple of months. You know, they were just bussing people around 600,000 years ago. Really, it's like, I don't know, just like put it on a timeline and then it all sort of begins to make a lot more sense, is my point.
Yeah, they even used a graphic of spaceships flying around firing on the planet as if all of this one type of, you know, upright primate just suddenly ceased, you know, like it was a Jamestown colony or something. And
yeah,
I don't think that's the narrative you would get from qualified experts.
There's a few other things that kind of come up which didn't seem real. I think it's Suklos says that there were two times, 40,000 years ago and 70,000 years ago, where the human population became very small, like almost down to like, say, 3,000. 70,000 years ago, that there was a supervolcano that reduced the human population. It's the Toba supervolcano. And then 30,000 years ago, Suklos says 40, but I think he's talking about this, there was a rapid cooling which led to a regional population drop in Europe and some actual pockets of extinction. So I don't think it got down to 3,000 at that point, but regionally, it was catastrophic in Europe. Again, not aliens, but there were these sort of episodes in which the human population or the hominid population dropped quite low.
Well, and Wilcock has a theory for why, which I think is so typical of a certain kind of horniness that this show has as far as how aliens like to interact with people, which is aliens like to, at least once upon a time, now they're sophisticated and they bring you up and put you on a table and extract your DNA, as we said. Once upon a time, it seems like they just came down and had sex with the humans. So David Wilcock very helpfully says,
is it possible that interbreeding was frowned upon and that once interbreeding with Neanderthals started to take place, it was damaging the very essence of the experiment, and because of that, the Neanderthal strain had to be terminated or removed from the planet to stop this from happening?
So the solution, of course, is to go through and carpet bomb Western Europe to make sure that that things get restored so that the aliens and only the aliens can be the ones having sex with a variety of humans. That seems to be what Wilcock's point was.
So there's a brief, very strange little side trip to West Virginia and the remnants of the giants. And William Henry is so psyched about this. He cannot believe how psyched he is.
Absolutely amazing.
1880s excavations turned up remains of 7.5 foot tall humans.
That's a giant.
And so I guess for about 40 years, like, that was kind of a known thing.
That is incredible.
And then in 1920s, the government started denying that the giants existed. Well, that's mostly because they realized that the science saying that they were giants was not accurate, and that there weren't actually a race of giants.
Wow.
You know, I did a little research on this. The people who actually find the bones in the 1880s aren't scientists. So they're just like, shit, take a look at the size of this thing. That must be a 7-footer, you know? And it kind of went from there.
Like catching a fish, really. Look at this.
Yeah, exactly.
And they exaggerated in just the same way.
Yeah.
It's a big fish tail.
I looked into that too, Toby, because I've heard various, you know, renditions over the years and just never was interested enough to really head off, you know, down that rabbit hole. But I did find that some women named Charity Moore and Olivia Jones had done quality research on it. And their take on it was, as you're suggesting, the 7-footer was not a scientific measurement. It was an eyeball guess at the site. And then some of the sources that are cited over the years, these women noted, are only newspaper clippings that don't cite sources, or that just cite a man said. They don't actually have the material. They don't have the, as we discussed earlier, evidence available for public review. And at least some circumstances, these were identified as hoaxes.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Let's just get to the conclusion here. Ancient astronaut theorists believe that evolution involves ET manipulation. Again, evidence not presented. William Henry shows up again after his revitalizing trip to West Virginia to ask, are we an experiment to create a race able to travel to the stars? I guess it's possible.
As you know, if you've ever been to the Kennedy Space Center, that's their motto. It says NASA. I guess so.
I guess so. There we go. Neil Armstrong famously had that tattooed on his lower back. Linda Moulton Howe sort of ends the whole thing by saying, are we being replaced by hybridized species? And then somewhat plaintively mentions that
one of the things that I think about often now, Neanderthals never knew they were going to be replaced by Homo sapiens.
And again, it's like, well, probably not, since it took place over tens of thousands of years. A single Neanderthal probably did not take that all in and sort of draw that deduction. But who am I to doubt Linda Moulton Howe?
Well, it happens in any individual's lifetime, too. You've lived in a town long enough, and you see your favorite coffee shop close. You see your favorite dive bar go out of business. You see all these new people come in with their dumb cars and beliefs and religions, and they stand upright, and they're less hairy. I mean, we can understand that.
Well, you live in L.A., dude.
Yeah. This town used to be so cool. Now it's lame. Forget
there's
it.
There's a bunch of Neanderthals in their Teslas.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, Jack, how can people find you?
I can be found at expandingfrontiersresearch.org. You can also find us on Blue Sky. We have a Patreon where we post regularly there, and we're always happy to discuss our research and talk with folks about what they're doing too.
I think it's on YouTube, talked to Jack and Erica for about 2 hours a few months ago. We had a really interesting conversation. So if that's your gateway drug to the Jack Brewer experience, that's one way of going about it. So thank you so much for being on. This is great. This is a really interesting conversation.
I have thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's great to meet you, Brandon, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on, Jack, and we'll have to have you back on very soon. This has been More Like Ancient Phalians. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
And we'll see you next time.
Next time on More Like Ancient Phalians, we look at the British Area 51, a place called Rudlow Manor. Giorgio Tsoukalos and Nick Pope go on a field trip. We wonder how crazy important something would have to be secured by actual guard dogs. And a 14-year-old Welsh boy seems to carry a lot of weight in his small town. Plus, Rendlesham Forest and John Podesta. That's The Mystery of Rudlow Manor, Season 12, Episode 3.
More Like Ancient Phalians is a Grab Bag collab production. Our editor and producer is Heather Eagle Ears Wilson, and our music is by Nathan Reedy.
If you like the show, please leave us a rating and or a review on iTunes. It's really the best way of helping more people find out about the show. It's good for discoverability and everything else that ails us.
And if you don't want to do that, go out to the middle of the street and just start yelling.
Yeah, scream it to the rafters.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.